You're listening to Marketplace Weekend, where the economy meets real life. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Maybe you've spent a recent weekend at a fair, took your kids on rides, ate a funnel cake. You may not have realized that you were in the middle of a story about immigration, specifically seasonal legal immigration, what's known as the H-2B visa program. For fairs and carnivals, that means a lot of visas for workers who come up from Mexico. Jamie Sisley made a documentary about this, and it's called Farewell Ferris Wheel. And I asked him to explain how the carnival owners use the visa program.
They have to start with a demonstrated need, and that's pretty laborious. I mean, you have to publish newspaper articles, physical newspaper articles still. You have to prove that nobody was able to sort of take those positions. And then once there's that demonstrated need on the worker side, you have to actually get a visa. And those visas are pretty difficult to get because they're very competitive. There's a lot to it.
One of the most fascinating parts of this film is that it focuses on one guy who is kind of the link between workers and the carnivals who need labor, this guy, Jim Judkins. And I want to play a clip from him and then talk about him a little bit. Let's play it.
I'm the person that processes 81% of all the H-2B visas for the outdoor entertainment industry in the country. I didn't realize that I handled such a large percentage.
81% is a staggering amount. How many people does that mean? You know, who Jim is bringing into this country to do this work?
Well, again, it fluctuates, but typically in the carnival industry, it's anywhere between 3,000 to 5,000 people a year is that's who come up on these visas. And that sort of percentage we found was sort of typical for a lot of these industries. Generally, it's really organic. It starts, you know, a recruiter will, maybe they'll work for a carnival or a circus or another industry, and they'll find somebody that they're close to. They come up for the visa, and then their brother or their uncle or their sister, you know, is used as a referral, and it just sort of trickles down from there. And that's what happened in Jim's case.
There is a really interesting moment toward the end of this film where there's like a banquet and celebration for these workers. And someone refers to them as the Jim Judkins workforce family. And it's kind of a weird moment because it gets at this duality of, you know, he is facilitating their entry into the U.S., but is he a fair broker? Who does he work for, et cetera? There's a quote from one of the workers who says, you know, we don't necessarily like him, but we need him. What is his business, and how do people like Jim Judkins for the carnival industry or other industries, like, how do they function?
Well, I think it starts, in terms of Jim, it starts with a really, really deep love of the circus and carnival. Jim doesn't have, you know, a wife and kids. The carnival is his life. And I think that if you hear it from his point of view, he's sort of taken it upon himself to sort of help save the carnival industry because, you know, in his eyes and a lot of the employers' eyes, if it wasn't for these workers, the carnival just wouldn't be able to sort of subsist. On the other hand, people look at the H-2B as a way to sort of artificially keep costs down, and they look at people like Jim and other recruiters, you know, someone who sort of helps promulgate that. And so it really does depend on your point of view.
You followed this group of workers coming up for seasonal work. What has their experience been like, you know, during the time that you followed them?
Generally speaking, the workers are very happy to come up. A lot of Americans would sort of shake their heads and say, you know, I would never want to take down rides or travel around the country or live in these bunkhouses. But to these workers, the work's comparable, if not maybe a little bit easier, than trying to pick oranges and take them down mountains.
I want to play a clip from Gregorio, who has worked several seasons in the U.S., and he talks about the financial benefit of coming in to do this work. I want to play that one now.
De que fui para Estados Unidos, compré un lote con una casita, pequeñita casita, ¿no? Nos venimos aquí a este lugar y llegar ya a mi casa, que ya es mi casa, pues me daba bastante gusto. Somos escasos recursos, pero lo poquito que he hecho, a veces me pienso que es bastante lo que he hecho.
I mean, he says that, you know, since he did this work, he was able to buy a house. It's a beautiful feeling. Migrant workers, as you mentioned, earn around $350, $360 a week. How much does that buy you when you are sending money home? And are the concerns that you have heard from some of these migrant worker advocacy groups, are they fair about the low wages?
To your first question, the money goes a long way in Tlapakoyan. You know, we followed Gregorio for several years, and we followed another worker, Florencio. And both of them, their lives improved dramatically as a result of coming up and working at the carnivals. In terms of whether the workers' rights group's concerns about wages is valid, it's tough because the carnival industry is a little strange because they have a weekly wage that's sort of been on the books for years and years. The idea being that it's outdoor amusement, and sometimes it rains, sometimes there's weather. There's certain factors that contribute to this idea that if they did work an hourly wage, they wouldn't get paid as much. We did find kind of in our experience that the workers work a lot of hours, and I'm not sure if they're getting paid as much under this weekly wage as they would if they were being paid hourly.
I want to play one more clip from the film, which sort of gets at this issue of money and enforcement behind regulation.
It would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, for us to continue to operate successfully without the H-2B worker. They are the lifeblood of our seasonal business.
I think there's a moral component to the conditions that we allow people to work under in the United States. And there will always be an endless supply of people from other countries who are willing to come here and consider it even a good deal to make $1 or $2 an hour and to suffer under what we might regard as appalling circumstances.
Shouldn't it be the people's decision to make? We're not forcing them here, are we? They're coming here freely.
Okay, so you have kind of all of the perspectives there, the business perspective from Dan Musser from the Grand Hotel in Michigan, Mary Bauer from the Southern Poverty Law Center, and then Congressman Todd Rokita from Indiana. You know, you really took a broad view looking at kind of how all of this stuff comes together. Does Congressman Rokita have a point that there is free will involved here, and there is, as we heard from Gregorio, you know, money to be made in this industry? Or, you know, do the opponents have a point?
Certainly the workers have a choice as to whether or not they want to come up, but there's a certain human rights component here that people should meet, you know, regardless of if there's a law to it or not. I understand that migrant workers don't vote and they're not American citizens, but they're still working up here and American citizens are benefiting off of their work.
You know, ultimately, Congress did increase the number of H-2B visas allowed each year, you know, as we talked about at the beginning. But when you look at the carnival industry, is that going to be enough to keep them afloat?
We didn't find any carnival owners that were, you know, rich. They're all usually 3-4 generation deep organizations that are having a lot of trouble staying afloat. But I do think they would still survive if they didn't have these visas in place.
Jamie Sisley and Miguel Martinez made Farewell Ferris Wheel. It airs October 10th as part of the World Channel's America Reframed series. Thanks for talking with me.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it.